We talk our current gaming addictions and get first personal this week on How Did This Get Played. It's How Did This Get Played, the show where we discuss the worst and weirdest and wow. In this show, we say wow a whole lot. Wow, video games of all time. That third W is by at Scarlet Magi. And A, for October, we're doing How Did This Get Slayed, so send in your spooky third W's at GetPlayedPod, hashtag WWW, spooky third W's. I'll use them on the show. I'm a fourth W, Nick Weiger, along with Heather Ann Campbell.
I'm Heather Ann Campbell, along with our third host, Matt Apodaca.
Hello, everyone.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back, Bucket.
Edge. I always love starting off the show with this, this deep, deep hole of like esoteric, inaccessible references we're making that No one knows the origin of anymore.
And it's one of those things where if we stop doing it, more people would be upset than would appreciate it.
Regular listeners are like, now it's like part of the format, so there's an expectation for it. If you don't do it, people are going to lose their minds. But then people who are new to the podcast are like, what the fuck is this show?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but it's fine. Yeah, that's the trap of creating content.
I was like, do we have a Wikipedia page? And I'm looking it up right now. Mm-hmm. And I was like, maybe there's an explanation of what we're talking about at the top of the show.
Uh-huh.
And there is not. So even if you looked us up, you'd be like, there's no information here.
Well, get on it, Wiki people. If you edit Wikipedia, help out your fellow listener. Put
there
it in
go.
There. Because I'm not gonna do that. I don't even know how.
Yeah.
And I'm not gonna donate.
I did fix some typos on Count Chocula's Wikipedia once. Like, I legit did that.
Why?
I just saw, like, there was some, I was, like, reading through it for get information about the guy.
Uh-huh.
And there was just, like, it just had some grammatical and syntactical errors. And I was like, I gotta fix this.
Yeah, this cannot stand.
That's the only Wikipedia editing I've ever done.
Wow. Well, yeah. I love it.
Yeah. Hey, let's talk about some video games. What do you say?
Mm. Let's do it.
Hmm. Okay.
I sure do love video games, and I had a pretty big development in my life this week, which is that I joined the PC Master Race.
Dun, da, da,
da, I got myself a gaming PC. What is this? What are you doing?
Apodaca's doing the 20th Century Fox fanfare, and I think we're just both choosing to not to acknowledge it.
So I got a gaming PC, and so I'm really, here's what I want. I want recommendation. What are, I'm serious.
I don't know why I did it.
Keep talking. I want to hear.
No, it's fine. Who gives a shit?
You got a gaming PC. This is huge.
Look, if.
It was for you.
If the esoteric intro hasn't already made you turn this off, if this is your first episode, then I'm sure that the rambling, nonsensical, interruption-based format of the podcast has now given you a second opportunity to turn off the podcast.
And if you're still here, you're a freak.
I got a gaming PC.
Hell yes.
And I'm excited about it. But
very cool.
I don't know what to play on the gaming PC. And here's what I want. I want to play games that are so... Here's my dream game would be a game where you are a medieval person in a ground level, not civilization style where you're like bird's eye viewing it. You're a medieval person and it is a fiercely accurate, like one hit kills simulated world.
Mm-hmm.
And it like a time. I want time traveling games, and it feels like that's the kind of thing that a PC community would make, or a PC developer would make, that would never make it on a console because it would be off-putting or have too small an audience. Mm-hmm. But what I want is like I want to be dropped off in like 1500s Southern France or Bristol or wherever the fuck, and I want to have nothing and like have to like. Basically, like, get into people's houses and steal their stuff in order to get a sword. And if anyone catches me and they hit me, I'm dead. And that's the game.
That's it. Mm-hmm.
And then you start again.
There is a, I'm trying to remember what the, it's, I don't think it's Mountain Blade, but there's a series, there's a franchise that's like that that's just purely combat. And they recently, I'm thinking of Mountain Blade because Mountain Blade 2 came out last year, but there's another one that just recently had a sequel. I can't remember the fuck it's called. But there are very much games like that.
Yeah.
Like they're, you know, if you're just looking for a, it sounds like you're looking for less of a hardcore, you're looking for less of an RPG and more of just like a hard, like a kind of a almost an immersive sim or like just something where it's just like a, like maybe purely combat focused. What the fuck was it? Is it Chivalry? What was that game called?
As an outsider looking at PC games, you'll see like on Twitter, you'll like blaze past something that looks like it does not have a ton of like textures on the polygons. Like it looks, I mean, like it looks respectable. It looks like a PlayStation 2 game or like early PS3 game. And then somebody will be like, I fell off a mountain and lost all of my gear because my guy died of a broken leg. Like Oregon Trail, but you're playing it. That's what I want.
I'm thinking it's maybe. Wait, did I say Mountain Blade?
Yeah, you
said,
Mountain
Blade. It's not Mountain Blade.
It's not Mountain and Blade. Wait, no, not Mountain Blade.
Mount and Blade.
Like Mount and Dew.
Mount and Blade. Yeah, like there's like it's an ampersand. It's not a mountain. It's not Mountain Blade.
Well, that's
a cool name.
That's the Mountain Dew?
Yeah.
That's the kind of game I want to play. So if you're out there and you listen to this podcast and it's, I don't know, a month from now and I haven't found that game yet, please hit us up on Twitter and tell me, hey, why don't you play Knights of Darkness or whatever the fuck it's going to be called? And I'll be like, great. And I'll be like, oh, man, I tried to get on a horse and I fell off and I broke my neck. This game is incredible.
I do know the Kingdom Come Deliverance. That's like very like, you know, that's more of an RPG, but that does have like some pretty hardcore elements to it. I think it's also maybe got some bad politics, but, you know, that's another issue. But it's a. It's like a, and I think you can play that on console as well, but that's got some, it's like an exhaustive, you know, medieval RPG that doesn't have like, you know, like fantasy and spells and shit. It's just like trying to create an actual world. I think the game I was thinking of was Chivalry. I think that's what it was, although that doesn't sound right. But that might also scratch that itch. I'm sure people have recs for you.
If I can add another layer to this, it's that my gaming PC also is VR. I'm VR ready. I'm ready to go with a Valve Index. And I've seen videos of things where people are playing a game where they got a sword in their hand and somebody runs up to them and the sword play. I mean, it looks like you'll just like stab somebody and they'll die. And that also seems like a lot of fun, especially if that other person is real.
Right.
So Heather's looking for a game where she can realistically kill someone and get away with it. So if you know... Honestly, you might want to try, I know you don't like sneaking that much, but maybe Hitman 3 in VR on PC could be something you might be interested in.
Okay. I'll give that a shot as soon as I'm done, you know. The first thing I'm going to do with VR is just watch pornography where I'm small and they're big.
Giant.
I'm sure there's a Skyrim mod for that.
Have I told you guys that story before? That the one piece of pornography that I have watched in VR, the camera was, everything was wrong. So the human being was very, very big. And
that's so funny.
Yeah. And if you looked at your own body, you were also extremely big. It was like a wide angle lens or something. Mm-hmm. So your feet looked like they were 30 feet away.
Like clouds down there. Just like.
Also, I watched that, I think, in an office where they were demoing VR. And I was like, what does pornography look like on this? And they were like, we'll load up something. And they put it on. And I just kept
immediately
laughing.
Had it. Like, yeah. Like, yeah. Oh, yeah. I don't know. I guess I'll just push this button that I already designed.
I don't know if I maybe cut this story out, but I'll tell it anyway. When I worked in video games, I won't say which company, one of my coworkers brought a modded Xbox into the office to just like, hey, we could just play this in the break room or whatever. And we opened up that was like it's like hacked and had like a bunch of old arcade games and shit, you know. We opened up the disk drive to put something in, and there was a porno DVD in there called No Boys Allowed. I'd say the other thing you have access to now, Heather, I touched on mods, but like, hey, you got mods. You want to mess around with mods? You can throw mods on there.
Yeah, I want to play Death Stranding, except it's Hatsune Miku, and she's singing the whole time.
But there are, yeah, there's a, I think there 100% is something on PC that will scratch that very specific itch you have for medieval combat.
Can't wait. It's not, and to be clear, it's not combat specifically, right. It's survival. I want a game where like, also, I think on the show before about this like DS game called Lost in Blue, where yes. like mm-hmm. you're on an island and you're immediately starting to starve. And if you can't find food by the end of the day, that's the end of the game. And like that feels like the kind I want a realistic simulation of what if I was dropped in the 1500s.
Mm-hmm. I think this is it's not that specifically, but it's more Viking-y. I think Valheim is exactly that. I think that's what you're looking for. It's an early access right now, but it's like it's got a huge, huge user base.
Okay.
And that's very much a survival game in like a Viking setting.
Cool.
Yeah.
I like Vikings.
Yeah. There you go. We know you like Vikings.
I love
from all your Valhalla adventures. Yeah, that might scratch that itch.
Great. What else are we going to talk about today?
That's the show.
Heather's going to ask for recommendations, and then me and Matt will fail to give them. That will be the whole show.
Yeah. What about this? No. Okay. What about this? No.
So we covered Yakuza 0 on the podcast about a month and change ago. And I kept playing the sumbitch, maybe longer than that. I kept playing the sumbitch, and I finished it 78 hours in. Actually, today, we actually postponed the record that we had scheduled today because I was in the middle of a boss fight, like what I thought was the final boss fight, and then had like a whole bunch, enough cutscenes worth of ending that my controller disconnected afterwards. So like it just like this game just kind of had an end game that kept going, but I thought it was extremely satisfying. I you can finish this game in a shorter span, but I got sucked into doing a bunch of the sub stories. I finished the two major quest lines, which are Real Estate Royale and Cabaret Club Czar. Got the achievements for both of those, and those both take like 10 plus hours, I'd wager to sink into them to max them out. I just like, I know we talked about this game on the podcast. I know I've talked about it a few times. This, along with Snatcher, are the two games that really stand out as I only played them because of this podcast, and I am so glad that I played them.
Wow.
They are like I fucking love this game. I think it's so good. It's only risen in esteem the more time I've sunk into it, even though I feel that some of it is like some of it does get tedious. And I do kind of feel like some of it has a formula of so many of the sub stories slash side quests. They're called sub stories in the game, climax with some sort of combat encounter that kind of gets like, you know, it feels repetitive. But so much of it is so satisfying. It's so funny. Like the humor in it, like, would make me laugh out loud at times. It's got great dialogue, a great localization. And I also think, like, it's just got, like, this game in particular, and I'm not sure about the franchise at large, though I intend to explore more of it now, has, like, it's, like, set in the bubble 80s economy in Japan, and has kind of, like, strong comments about capitalism in terms of, like, as you're building this real estate empire, it's the most money you can make in this game is via passive income. So, like, you get to a point where you can just have unimaginable wealth by literally just, like, idling in your real estate office and waiting to collect on your properties. Like, so much more money than you would if you just were kind of, like, trying to grind out combat encounters or whatever. It's that, and then we're setting this, you know, and we're dealing with the glitz of that side of the world, but then also there's all this homelessness in this neighborhood that you're in as well, and all this sort of desolation and poverty. It's just really, really well done. But also it's just fucking cool as shit.
Yes.
Like it's funny, the story's great. But we talked about this, Matt. The moment where you take your shirt off, your player character takes his shirt off in one motion to reveal a full back tattoo before a big combat encounter, which happens a few times in this game. And it happens with mini bosses too. They'll do the same thing. They'll rip off their blazer, tie, and dress shirt in one motion and then show their full back tattoo, which looks cool as shit, and their huge muscles or big barrel chest. And then you just beat the shit out of each other. You just wail on each other. It's so fucking satisfying, and it's so cool, and it's so cinematic. And it's just, that's the thing I immediately just want to do in real life.
Well, yeah, I feel like this is why I should say why we were talking about it was because you said it was cool. And I told you that I tried it and it worked. I immediately tried to see if I could do it. And there's like a way to do it, of course, but it's like you have to sort of get one arm out fast and like in the sort of body of your shirt. And then with your other arm that's still in the shirt, pull from the opposite direction and then pull it all the way over your head. And you can do it. It's hard to get the arm that's supposed to be in the shirt in there fast because that's like an awkward motion, but if you can do that, you're already 90% of the way there. That's most of it. And then once you start pulling, that shirt's flying off.
I want to say, you know, I'm on this text thread and I watched this exchange between the two boys, and I was so proud.
You were the first to respond in all caps. Wow.
I was so proud because I haven't seen this thing happen, but I like what I'm hearing in my head is the description of a violent magic trick. And like the idea of Apodoc in his house being like, watch a YouTube video and then be like, I got this.
Yeah.
And then doing it feels like it feels like you mastered a card trick where you like pick any card and they do, and it's a gun.
Yeah.
Like, it's just awesome.
It was, I'll say, very concerning to my girlfriend. She was like, why are you doing that? And I was not explaining. And then I put my shirt back on and did it again.
And when did you get a full back tattoo of a dragon?
That was sort of the bigger conversation. You know, it was bleeding still.
So there's so much text in this game, and there's no English dub. It's all in Japanese, and which I love. Even if I had the option for the dub, I would have used the Japanese VO. And the performances are great, but there's just so much fucking text that it must have been such a Herculean effort to localize it. Also, because there's so much like slang, and it's like 80s period slang in Japanese that they're trying to make, you know, make sense for a contemporary, you know, Western audience. Also like there's things like, you know, Japanese honorifics are a big part, like, you know, call it like chan and kun and san, and giving context for that to Western audiences, like within the dialogue. The game does a pretty good job of that. There's one quest that I'm like, I wonder what the original was, but the pizza quest. So you find a woman who is not from Japan and is a sex worker, and she wants help finding her. She needs a pizza. And she can't pronounce things correctly. And your character, Kazuma, is like, okay, pizza. I think she wants a pizza. And so you go and retrieve a pizza. You have to Death Stranding style, take a pizza flat, you know, as you're holding it and walk over and get it to her within the time limit so she can have her pizza while it's hot. And then she's like, no, I didn't want my pizza. I didn't want that. I wanted a, you figure out she wanted a visa. She wanted, and I was just like, okay, so that's like such a thing of like, this is a miscommunication. Was it still pizza and visa, or like, what was the original thing that she was asking for, and how did they make this make sense in English?
Well, if she was asking for a visa, the phoneme for V is B. So she could have been saying visa, visa, and maybe it would sound like pizza.
But is it like, do you just say, is that a loan word in Japanese? Is like, is visa just visa?
I mean, she didn't speak Japanese, so maybe she was trying to, from what I understand, I feel like it's probably very close.
Okay.
But I didn't play that quest, so I can't speak to it, but what's everybody smiling about?
I'm thinking the quest, like the quest just kind of is a microcosm for the game's marriage of the very, you know, dark and serious and the absurd, which is that she is she's a sex worker. She's claiming she doesn't want to work for this man anymore. She's trying to get out of Japan, but he took her passport. But then also there's this kind of cartoonish confusion over a pizza and a visa, and you have to bring her a pizza urgently, find a place in Kamurocho that has pizza because it's like not as available there. And then after you, this confusion, her boss shows up, this guy who's holding her passport, and I think you beat the shit out of him. And then he says that he's actually in love with her and will marry her and doesn't want her to be a sex worker anymore. And she's like pleased by that. It's such a weird, what is going on exactly?
I just looked it up, by the way, and it is a loan word, and it is pizza.
Okay. Well, then it just made sense.
Yeah.
There you go. I'll also just kind of say, and I know I'm rambling here about this game, but it's like all I've been thinking about recently, especially today. The approach to having an open world game that has immense scope, but a very small game world, like a compact, dense game world, is so like I just really like it because it feels so alive. It feels like you can go in almost every building. So just focusing on two neighborhoods of two cities, Kamurocho in Tokyo and Sotenbori in Osaka, which I found out both of those are fictional. I don't know. It's just like I think it's just like a really cool approach. Is that the thing I really like about the game? And I'm excited to return to these environments and other entries.
Cool. I'm glad that you've become passionate about the Yakuza games.
I love it so much.
You know what? On this wholesome podcast, I'm happy that Nick has a thing that he loves.
For the first time, this is great.
Wait, what?
I was going to
usually like fuck Nick Weiger? Is that what you? Because
no, I'm saying he finally has something he enjoys.
Yes. There's some lines that stuck with me. One of them is this is so gay. And again, the delivery is in Japanese, so this is kind of my read of what I think it sounds like. But it's Sotenbori is not your backyard. It's your cage. Your cage.
Hell yeah!
It's just like so. Like it's like this fucking rules.
Yeah,
I love this. And
like
if
anyone ever spoke to me that way, I'd be like, "Well, here's the second that I die. Like, there's no way I'm surviving this encounter."
I didn't even talk about the pocket circuit, which is just like it's so. That in of itself, like you can spend so much time customizing your pocket circuit racer, which is your like slot car, because, you know, some of the mini games are super fun and some of them kind of suck. But I kind of like that it's all in there. I just came to love this more is more approach. I don't know. I great franchise. I'm really, really glad the podcast introduced it to me.
My favorite part about your playing of this game is that when you showed us your completion rate, it was at 66%. And I give you a little shit about it because you've been playing it for so long. And you said, well, in order to 100% this game, Yakuza, where, you know, you've got a chicken working for you at your real estate company, right?
Right.
in order to 100% this game, you would have to become extremely good at Mahjong. It's yes. so funny to me.
Yeah, from looking at how long to beat, and it looks like the completionist is about 140 hours. Jesus. So almost double my current play time to get everything completed. Because so many of the mini games, you just have to like fucking just grind at for a long time and either get good at them or put enough hours to get through them. There's a GameFAQs guide which I tried not to refer to too much, but it's like it's one of the most comprehensive guide I've ever seen because I think the fans of this franchise are really really. Into this franchise. Cyric Z is the writer. I think he's covered a lot of the Yakuza series. And I love that he has this little like about him on his profile. Cyric Z started writing to get all the thoughts in his head about video games onto paper and it got out of hand.
He is not in control of his own ability.
No, he's got like this 50,000 word Yakuza Zero guide that's like immensely detailed about absolutely every element. It's really an amazing gift he's given to the its player base.
Batrox, do you think you're gonna stick with this franchise? You're gonna explore other titles in it. Are you gonna jump into like the next canonical one, or are you gonna jump into like a more modern title?
I think my options are either to go to Like a Dragon, which mm-hmm. is the new one, or the newest one in the mainline series. It's just called Part 7 in Japan, but that's got a completely different combat system. It's got a turn-based JRPG combat system, and it's also a different character, so it's kind of like a soft reboot. So that's one option, but I honestly kind of just want to go, like, I really like the main character, or one of the two main characters, who I guess is the main character of most of the series, Kazuma Kiryu, and, like, I just want to kind of follow his story, so I think I'll probably go back to, I'll probably just play Yakuza 1, there's a remake of it, Yakuza Kiwami, I think it's called.
Yes.
That everyone says to play next.
I really liked Yakuza 0. And part of me was like, because I finished the main story I didn't touch any of the side stuff really, like at all.
Yeah, right.
And that's how I was able to blaze through it at 40 hours.
You can do that. I mean, that's one approach. So I would say, like, if people are intimidated by the playtime, you can 40 hours is still a lot of fucking time to invest in something.
It's still like that was me doing it as fast as I could.
Yeah. You know, if you just want to take a leisurely stroll through Yakuza 0, dedicate an entire work week of 8 hours a day every day.
That's like watching 20 movies.
And that's for the easiest version of the thing.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah,
but it's great. But it's really fucking awesome. It's really unique, and it honestly reminded me of The Sopranos, just in terms of it's more operatic than that. But mm-hmm. the marriage of this hyper-violent underworld storyline and this, you know, just like goofy comedy. I think it just does it so. It's able to operate in both tones so effectively.
I don't know if it's going to make it into the actual record, but for those of you listening at home. Mm-hmm. Apodaga's cat is meowing constantly.
It's going so crazy.
A lot
it's
of
going
meowing.
Crazy. And I kind of hope it's still present in, I mean, it might be edited out. They might be able to edit around it, but yeah. I mean, it's
driving me crazy. Here's the thing you don't know. I already gave this motherfucker everything he could ever want, like before we started. So he would be quiet.
Okay. Well, now a nice little can of gravy. He deserves it.
Yeah. Yeah. I am going to go see if I can give him something real quick. Hold on, I'll be right back.
Okay, right. Matt's going to step away.
So now it's just me and Nick, like the old days.
Wow, how about that?
Before we had three hosts, and it was just the two of us.
Hmm.
Hmm.
Didn't work.
No,
that was the issue.
Show,
it didn't work.
Yeah, no. And I think this is demonstrating why. Because the words are coming slower and slower,
right.
And we have less and less to talk about. Oh, thank God he's back. Oh, thank God.
Hi,
oh, my God.
Matt went up to his cat and said, "This apartment is not your backyard. It's your cage. Your cage."
In many ways, that's true because he does not go outside.
You know what? I was also dabbling with WarioWare Get It Together, which, Matt, I know you put some serious hours into.
Yes, yeah. I've been playing WarioWare Get It Together pretty much nonstop since I got it. Well, not entirely nonstop. I've been playing something else, too. But I played through the entire story on Twitch, and I was kind of like, because it's only 2 hours. You can do it all, you know, especially if you're good at WarioWare games. You can kind of finish it pretty fast. And I messed up a couple times, but I still finished it within like about 2.5 hours. Mm-hmm. And, you know, but the story is not the game. The games are the game, right? Like, you're not really, I don't even care what the story was. Like, that's how unimportant the story is to me in WarioWare games. The story to me is I want to unlock every single game that's in this that this game can give me, beat every single high score, and then just put it away forever. I want to master every single game in this game. It is so fun, and it's different than previous WarioWare entries. You have control over, it's like 17 characters or something. It's so many characters. What if I just listed all of them right now? You know, there's 5-bit, there's 9, or there's 5 full, 9 volt, 18 volt. Mm-hmm. There's
Dribble Mike, and Spitz, of course.
Dribble and Spitz.
Ashley. Can't forget Ashley.
You cannot forget Ashley. You got Wario, of course.
Yeah.
And the rest. But
who's the dancing guy? Jimmy?
Jimmy's very cool.
I like Jimmy.
I like the professor guy.
He's
really funny. But the fact is, it's so polished. Each character has their own sort of way of moving, so it sort of adds a layer of difficulty to each game, because you're like, okay, how do I solve this little game with this character's move set? You know, you're limited to what these characters can do, because, like, let's say you're Wario, so you can fly around and dash. Those are your two things. Those are your modes of locomotion. If you're 9 volt, you're on a skateboard that you don't have control over, but you do have control over your yo-yo, which you can use to grapple or attack things with, and that shoots upward. So you're like, okay, you're not going to be able to solve it in the same way. You have to figure out how each character works for each level. And that is so fun and frustrating in an interesting way, because it's like, it's not frustrating in a way where I'm upset. It's more like, oh, okay, they got me. They got me on this one, but I'm going to come back and I'm going to do it again and I'm going to be good. It is such a funny, like, on stream, I was like cracking up. Like, I was like,
yeah, it's very
truly,
funny.
Really laughing at the game, like, out loud. And it wasn't the fake laughs we do on here.
Huh.
It was like,
Jesus.
You know, the fake laughs that we always do. I was truly guffawing, like, at this game. And it's really funny. And there's also, like, once you finish the game, you know, finish the story, you get access to, like, a sort of, like, online mode. But it's not, like, online, like, player versus player. It's sort of, like, a leaderboard, like, situation where you can get enough points. If you clear it in a certain, time and, you know, with as many characters or whatever, beating a score, you can get points. And then it shows you, like, amongst your friends who is good, like, who's good at the game and who sucks. I'll say right now,
and that's how it ranks them.
And that's how it
good
ranks
or
them.
Sucks.
Yes. Past guest on the show, Mono Agapian, is number one on my leaderboard right now.
Wow.
He's very good at WarioWare. Yes. Very congratulations. Wow. But it's so charming, and I just can't believe, I don't know if it was developed in quarantine. It must have been working on it, right? But, like, it was all the conversations around it coming out certainly happened in this time. And there was, like, a survey that sort of, like, leaked the presence of a WarioWare game that was approaching, that was like, hey, how much would you pay for WarioWare? Like, that was the extent of the survey. And it was like $60, $50. I wouldn't pay for it, or another option. Mm-hmm. And people were like, $50 seems okay. And they're like, okay, it'll be cost $50.
Yeah, it is the kind of, like, you know, because there's not necessarily a lot to it, although I love what's there. That's always the case with these WarioWare games. It does kind of feel like this is, paying $50 for this is a lot, but I just also, I feel like it's so fun and it's so charming and unique that for me personally, I was okay taking the, I mean, it wasn't, didn't feel great about it, but it was okay taking the wallet hit for kind of a slight game just because I love how it looks and feels and sounds. The aesthetic of these WarioWare games, I just find so pleasing. It's like, it's like this collage of like 2D line art and low poly 3D and actual photographs that's just so anarchic and busy. And at times even like it's like almost unpleasant to look at, but it's just so cool. It's like so unique. And it just adds to the chaos of the frantic gameplay where it's like, wait, what am I supposed to do? Oh, I've got to take I've got to remove a rock so this robot can walk over and water a plant. You know, it's like, and you have to figure this out with it in 4 seconds of real time.
Or I have to tweeze these realistic hairs from a marble statue.
Yeah.
And it's like, that's gross.
We covered WarioWare back in the day on this podcast with our buddy Alex Berg.
Yes, we did.
It was
a pleasure then, and it's probably a pleasure now. I think... You guys were talking about price point on this game, and I think that Nintendo should have released it at $150 and like just had Wario on the front, like holding tons of money. Like, what? If you're gonna overcharge for mini games, why not lean in? You've got the character excuse. Yes. Like, people would be like, let it for like months. Ride at $150 to play WarioWare.
Yes.
And then drop it to like a normal price after like all of the like early adopters and like conspicuous consumers have demonstrated that they're already playing it. And I feel like Wario would be proud of that.
100%.
Yeah.
The thing about it though too is that like, you know, $50 is probably like a steep price point for like the amount of, I don't know. Is it amount for the amount of game you're getting? Because like obviously it's Wario, it's Nintendo, so it's like you're gonna expect like a sort of first rate product, right? Like it's like you expect this to be pretty good. But I think you make all your money back in the replayability of it. Like I've probably sunk like 8 hours into it already. I think.
Wait. I got bad news for you, Appadaga. You can't make your money back on this game. Like, it's not going
to
happen.
Well, yeah, but I guess, like, in terms of, like, story to dollar, like, ratio. Like,
sure, but the money's gone. Like, I understand you're getting your value, like, your money's worth. Yes.
Right.
You're not going to get your money back, no matter how much you play the game or how much you like it.
No, but...
I just opened my save and I have, as of right now, I'm not that far into it, but I have 8,600 Wario coins. So I don't know if I can turn that into cryptocurrency or something
I
can't Wario cash that
would
out.
Have, if any Nintendo character did have like crypto, it would be Wario.
Get my W coin.
Fucking arrested by the SEC. It's really charming. It's really fun. I do like the direct control of a character within the game and how they've made every game works for every character as far as I've played of it. It's like, which is just an interesting design challenge to like figure out how do we make these kind of mini platforming levels playable by every single character with their unique abilities and solvable. And some are like super easy with certain characters and some are like a fucking pain in the ass. And it just kind of depends because it's a semi-random pairing except for the boss battles.
And the cool thing about the like online like leaderboard thing is there are weekly updates to that. So every week it's like a new set of challenges. And so like this week, as of recording, the challenge is you have to clear a certain amount of levels with like a random assortment of characters that you pick. And each character has like a difficulty number, right? Uh-huh. So like Wario is like 96 or something. And like some of the other characters, like 100, some of them are lower. And that number means it's going to be easier or harder to complete the challenges in that set. And if you pick more characters with higher difficulty levels, you get more points. And if you pick ones with lower, you get lower. But it's going to be easier for you to go further in the challenge. So like I'm interested to see how many different ways they can mix it up. Because I love it. It's probably one of my favorite games I bought this year.
I'm really it's a really nice thing to be playing after an 80 hour JRPG to kind of like nice little palate cleanser. And Matt, when I see you on those leaderboards, I'm coming for your ass.
You better, because guess what? You better be hungry for dust specifically, because you're gonna eat my dust. You bitch.
You mentioned fake laughter earlier. Uh-huh. I feel like that only applies to you guys, because most of the shit you guys say does not make me laugh. Is it the natural state of a podcast that the hosts eventually become antagonists no matter what?
If I'm thinking of another one, another podcast that I listen to, might be a common denominator.
I want to play a little audio from this game.
Okay.
This is a great track, because these games always have really good music. Sometimes original songs, like this one by Takeru Kanazaki is the composer. This is Penny's Song from WarioWare Get It Together. Let's hear a little of this.
She's got her hair tied up in braids and glasses perched up on her face. She is a small girl taking on a big world with the inventions she made. And though her plans may go awry, she's gonna get back up and try. It's gonna be a shiny star. She's going for Penny.
Like, they didn't have to.
They didn't have to, no. And they did. They fucking went for it.
It's pretty good.
Yeah, I'll take all that you got.
That's pretty good. That's pretty good stuff right there.
Yeah, it's good stuff.
And with mods, I'll be able to hear that song as I ride on my horse in ancient Mesopotamia.
That's the dream.
That's the dream.
Any other games we've been playing?
I mean, I can say that... over the last couple of weeks, I've been on a journey with Ghost of Tsushima, and you boys convinced me to bump it up to the final difficulty level, and I am addicted to that game now. It is fucking awesome. It is so good. Like, I think I described to Matt that when I clear a village... And any two hits can kill me, or any single arrow fired can kill me. If I manage to clear the village, I feel like I did something in my real life. The dopamine hit is so huge that, like, I'm like, I basically wrote a book. Like, that's what it feels like. And prior to this, it didn't feel like anything. Like, I was complaining about it every week. I'm like, just not getting into it. Now I get, like, the whole game fits together like a puzzle for me now. Like, because the combat is challenging and thrilling, and I'm so dedicated to not assassinating people, like, I want to be a samurai. So anytime I go into a village, I shout at people, you know, come at me. I'm not sneaking, none of that shit. Just, like, fucking run on the roof, see a guy, jump at him. but because that combat is so intense... The haiku sections make sense now, because it's like, okay, I want to take a break. I want to gather my wits. Like, stepping into a hot spring makes sense. All the little side stories. I'm like, yes, tell me your story. Because when I have to go into a fort and murder a bunch of people, and it might take me 10 tries, sometimes 20 tries. Sometimes I'll just take a knife to the back and I'm like, well, never saw that person. It is thrilling and satisfying and wonderful. Matt, why are you smiling?
Because my cat's still making so much noise.
Anyway, that's my endorsement for Lethal Difficulty on Ghost of Tsushima. I even uploaded a clip and I might start doing that because it's fun.
Yeah. Yeah, no, you're really good at the game. It's fun to watch somebody.
House. It's a lot of fun.
Be good at it.
I love it.
You know, Yakuza has the... I'm still have mixed feelings about the combat, because some of it, like, is a little tedious. Some of also, I feel like the... Some of the bigger encounters are less fun just because they're just like it feels like you don't get to do, you just have to be a little bit a little more wiggly and dodgy and chippy, and you don't get to do your cool stuff as much. But there are still some just absolutely awesome combat encounters. But the one thing that game does that I think Ghost of Tsushima does as well is just like make you feel really powerful. And that's a very satisfying thing in a game to just be like, oh, my guy can just fuck up a bunch of shit. Like that is like just that raw power fantasy of my character is strong. And especially if you, and it feels like in your case, Heather, like you feel very responsible for that because of this ratcheted up difficulty level that you're subjecting yourself to.
I do wish there was a higher difficulty level. Once I crossed that threshold and I was like, okay, I've adjusted to this. I want it to be harder again because I've also done the duels. I'm only in chapter two. And I've done some of these duels, and the first duel was a fucking nightmare. Like going up against the straw hat guy on lethal difficulty with, you know, I have this second level of armor. That guy would cut me in half. Oh, like with his first hit over and over again, if I did not predict what he was about to do and he threw like an unblockable thing and I didn't dodge, like even with the, also I feel like the window is accelerated. The window of response time is accelerated on this difficulty, but I might be mistaken. Once I adjusted to that, like, cause that guy took me down so much that I got the on-screen prompt that was like, do you want to skip this? And I was like, fuck you. I'm not backing down. And then finally beat him and was just like, yes. But then the next time I was like, okay, now I have these pathways in my brain and I can do this. And I tore through the next duel without losing once. And so now I'm like, I need my fix. You know, I need a bumped up difficulty.
Well, cause that's the Straw Hat Ronin quest, right? Like where you're going around, there's like seven of them or something that you're fighting around the map. Is that what you're talking about?
I don't know. I don't pay attention to what those people are saying to me. I just fight them.
there's one of those quests where you have to, but I think it's one of those ones. They're all basically the same, kind of the same fight. They're all just different versions of the same fight. It's not like they get more difficult as you go because you can tackle them in any order. If that's what I'm thinking of.
Well, it was something where there's just like a guy in the middle of the marsh and he was in a circle and he's like, fight me. And it was like duel in the marsh. And I was like, okay, I don't know who this guy is, but I'll do it. And then he was really tough. And then I got him. And then I went to some other duel of the waterfall or something. Fuck that guy up. But I don't know what their story is. I don't know what they're talking about.
Right. I love those duels. I love I only played on PS4. I can only imagine how they looked like on PS5, but they just look so cinematic and cool when it's just the two characters facing off.
It's great.
Those are fucking awesome.
It's great.
Yeah, it's really good.
High level endorsement for lethal difficulty on this game. Just like a robust Thanksgiving dinner of a time. Where you can, and afterwards, there's like a mead or like a spiced wine. Like there's so much to enjoy about this meal now. But yeah, the game is unbearable at any other difficulty.
I'll get the director's cut and I'll play it on hard. And then I'll complain about it being too hard. So that's the difference between you and me.
I think you should bump it all the way up and see what you can do. You might go surprise yourself.
Maybe, I played through the whole game. I platinumed it. So maybe I'd be fine on lethal. We'll see. Yeah.
If I did it on lethal, I think it would kill me in real life. I know we got other things to move on to also, but I don't have much to say about this, but I did get Deathloop.
Wow.
And I don't know. There, I feel like the internet's interesting, isn't it?
That's a good observation, Matt. I never thought of it like that.
Where are you going with this, Matt?
Because I think, along with everybody else online who was like who'd been paying attention to what games were coming out, every time they would show a Deathloop trailer at a Sony PlayStation like conference, it'd be just eye rolls galore. Nobody was interested. Nobody was like, "Oh, what is this? This looks weird. I'm not interested in this. Give me more."
Where's
stuff.
God of War? I want to see God of War.
Where's Spider-Man 2? Where's God of War? Ragnarok.
Me as myself, by the way.
Yeah, no,
whining.
I know. believe me, I know. but I was. It was interesting because then. This, like, last week, sometime around, or over the weekend, it started getting raves out of nowhere, you know, it's Bethesda and Arkane, they make good stuff, and it is nobody was expecting it to get raves, because it just looked so, like, nothing, and so I was like, okay, I think I'm mildly hyped for this.
Yeah, we're recording this the day after, you know, this will be out a little in a couple weeks. We're a little ahead recording this the day after it released, but it had a huge, you know, at least critics, like, really well received on PlayStation 5 anyway. I know PC, there's some possible performance issues that people are currently complaining about. I don't know if they'll be patched.
And so I'm playing it, and the voice acting's great. The combat is really fun. I basically just finished the, like, tutorial section of the game. And I say section because it wasn't just one level. It was, like, a cleverly designed, like, section of the game where, like, it's, like, the first act of the game is all tutorial. And, like, it's, like, it's a shorter act probably. But, like, it takes you through every single mechanic in the game, like, how it works. And now I'm in, like, the main part of the game, I think. And it, without saying, like, more about, like, the story or how it works, whatever, it's a wholly more interesting time loop story than 12 minutes could have ever been. It's so much cooler.
By the way, it's such a like time loop stuff is so zeitgeisty, right? I mean, it's been, you know, they've been doing variants of time loop for a while. I think ever since Groundhog Day kind of established the genre. And it's like, but games, like, it's like there's Deathloop, there's 12 minutes, which we covered on this podcast and Loathe for the most part. And there's also, what is this called? The Forgotten City, I think.
I think so, yeah.
That recently came out. Let me look it up. A lot of time loops right now.
Well, that's because we're all living in a time loop. It's like 2020 was the year of the pandemic.
Yeah.
2021, the year of the pandemic. I haven't seen a fucking human being in the flesh since. I mean, like, I don't consider myself a human being. So when you look at my hands,
say, yeah, how often was this an occurrence previously?
I've been indoor dining 3 meals a day, so I'm getting my FaceTime in. The Forgotten City is the game, which is also getting raves right now. Came out in a couple months ago, but people love The Forgotten City.
I wonder if, but to Heather's point, I wonder if we will see more stuff, more time loopy type things like that as a response to sort of living the same day over and over for almost 2 years. Not unlike how all art is reflective of the times, how we have Godzilla because of you know, the atrocities that America committed on Japan, and other examples.
Other examples.
And, you know.
It's the only one I could think of. It's late.
I thought we could maybe, with Deathloop just having come out, and we covered Portal on last week's episode. There's a Quake remake recently. I mean, obviously, you know, there's first person games are always coming out, but it's a topic that I feel like is a genre slash just kind of, I don't even want to say genre because it's like, it's broader than that. I don't want to just talk shooters. I don't want to just talk FPS games, but I thought we could just talk about, like, the first person perspective in gaming a little bit and everyone's thoughts about that, because you know, it's honestly, if anything was going to turn me off from playing Deathloop, is that I'm just kind of like, I always find first person games like a little exhausting, particularly shooters. But I do really want to play it. I think I can look past that because of its other qualities.
Yeah.
But I don't know, Heather, are you someone who, I know you're not an FPS person, but how do you feel about first person games? And do you have any favorites that stand out in your memory?
Well, I really liked Mirror's Edge because I felt like it had a sense of body in it that hadn't been present prior to Mirror's Edge. Like, you could see your feet and your hands, and you felt like you were like seeing out of eyes, as opposed to just seeing like the essentially the aiming reticule on a gun. That being said, the reason I don't like first person shooters as much as I like third person action games is because I think that human beings have a sense of spatial awareness that rapidly incorporates behind you. And right. A first person game is like looking into a toilet paper roll. Essentially, it limits your experience of the world to a tunnel. And that is frustrating to me because unless you have an incredible surround sound system, you do not have an awareness behind you unless you're also constantly spinning. So I find it really frustrating. How about you, Abadaka?
I don't typically love them. I've played very few in my life because of what I referred to as my delicate constitution last week with Portal. I think the first one I ever played was 13. Did you guys ever, do you remember that game?
Is that on the Wii?
I played it on PS2. Mm. And I remember liking it, but I was not familiar with any like games like that. Like I don't remember my uncle playing a lot of like first-person shooters when I was a kid, and he was who I would watch play video games. So I just didn't have a lot of experience with that. And then I think I probably messed around with some Halo, like when I was like, I played Halo for the first time like this year. What am I talking about? And I probably watched a friend play Halo, but I played through Halo Reach on my Xbox, which I loved. I loved Halo Reach. I loved it. And I played through some of the first Halo, and I was like, I'm kind of sick of this. But the only other one I really played was Cyberpunk.
Right.
And yeah, then Deathloop.
If you've got motion sickness, or you're prone to motion sickness, which I am as well, especially with first-person games, like I can get like legitimately, you know, headachy and dizzy. It can become a fault you have to overlook, like I was saying earlier. But I've played a ton of first-person games, and I definitely appreciate their value, especially for, you know, if you're making like an indie game in 3D. I mean, it's such a not having to render and animate a player character is such like a savings in performance and labor. Like, you know, just like having that be like, I'm going to be the camera is just such a way to make, you know, your vision achievable. And, you know, like a lot of walking simulators, I think are often in first person. You know, I played this 3D adventure game, but this first person Call of the Sea earlier this year, and I fucking loved it. And it being in first person, you know, I think actually helped it a lot. But my origin with first person games, it goes all the way back to PC RPGs. Like the first game that I ever played from the first person perspective was.
Wait, can I guess? Yes. Is it Daggerfall?
Not Daggerfall, though. I did play Daggerfall, and let me tell you, that was the first time in a game I saw nudity, which was really something. You could take your player character's armor off, all of it. Can see everything.
Whoa.
This game was like Doom level graphics. Like you're describing like
That's how you
like sub Doom. It was a very crude looking game, but you know, extraordinarily influential. I played Daggerfall. I'm probably one of the few people who played the first Elder Scrolls game, the Elder Scrolls Arena, which was very much just like a playable prototype. It was a pretty empty world, but no, even earlier than that, like and I'm talking about like tile based first person perspective RPGs, like the Bard's Tale, which came out in the 80s. And, you know, we got it on 5 1/4 inch floppy disks that you had to swap out. And it was like, it was both my first RPG and my first person perspective game. And that was party based. And that's how I think most RPGs actually were for a time. It was either isometric or they were from a first person perspective with a party. And then I played both Wolfenstein 3D, the original, and Doom when they came out, and those were like mind blowing experiences. Like, and then later Quake, they were all like kind of mind blowing in their own way. But I never really loved the genre, even though some of my favorite games are first person games, like, you know, like the aforementioned Portal or Half-Life 2. These are games that I absolutely adore. Some first-person games we've covered on this podcast are just so fucking good. So, yeah, I don't know. I mean, I think I'm going to definitely play Deathloop. I'm excited to play it, even though, like Matt, it kind of makes me nauseated. And like Heather, like, you know, I don't necessarily like the shooting aspect all that much.
Shooting is fine. It's just you can't. Like, it's not it's not satisfying in first person for me. I don't know why. It feels hollow or something. I don't know. Doom felt good, which is weird because it is so limited that I think your brain is like filling in all the information gaps.
Mm-hmm.
But like Halo feels like Nerf. Like, it's very weird to me in some way that I can't describe, and that perhaps some erudite video game writer would be able to articulate better than me. But I can't. Like, I don't know. It feels weird.
Yeah, I don't know. I guess that's our. We're kind of all on the same page, and just sort of like, yeah, we don't. It just doesn't work for us for whatever reason. I don't know. I kind of like seeing a guy, I guess, at some point, on some level as well.
I was gonna say there are some first person shooter games where you have the option to switch to a third person like mode, and I'll always do that. Like in Destiny, like I got Destiny was one of the games I got with my PS4. And I was like, I've never even played a game like this, but I'll try this, you know. And I was like, oh, first person. And then you could switch it out. I was like, oh, okay, this is fine. And I didn't like it. Like, I didn't love Destiny. But then I think Star Wars Battlefront, the original ones, were also first person, I think. And you could switch out. And I was like, thank God, because this is, no, we're not doing this. I don't like this.
Hmm.
Well, let me know what you think about Deathloop. I probably won't get to it right away, but I'm excited to hear about your spoiler-free journey through the game.
No, as you progress. I know what you mean. I'm going to tell you beat by beat exactly what's going on. Don't you worry.
No, don't spoil me. I'd hate it.
No, yeah, I can't wait to put more time into it. It's a fascinating game so far, I can already tell it's not going to make me dizzy, if that makes sense. Like, there's something about it that I'm like, oh, this is immersive enough where I don't feel sick.
Right. Hey, Heather. How about a trip down memory card lane with an item from your retro collection?
You mean welcome to Heather's hole?
Yeah, Heather's hole.
Okay. Hi, everybody. This is my hole.
So today I've got a game which I don't think I've covered in this segment before, and if I have, then we'll cut this and you'll never know. In 2006, a Sega Genesis game was released, and it was the first Sega Genesis game to be commercially released in North America since 1998. That game was Beggar Prince, originally known as, oh man, this is like the Prince and the Pauper.
Mm-hmm.
It's a Chinese
right.
words that I can't, I couldn't even, I mean, like, why, well, I can't try it.
Right.
Beggar Prince is a 4 megabyte or 32 megabit game. It's a huge game. And they sent it to us at the video game magazine that I was working at the time, which was Play. And they were like, would you guys review Beggar Prince? And my boss was like, no, we are not going to do this. Do you want this? You can have this. And he gave me this copy. I'm going to show you guys. This is the first printing of Beggar Prince. The art, if you look it up on Wikipedia, much nicer now on the cover of the game. The art that we got at the time looks like it was drawn by like a high school kid. Like it is.
Yeah, that's pretty crude.
It is rough. The art is rough. I'll read the description of the game from the back. It is a role-playing game. It's pretty fancy. The snobby, selfish prince of Shat Kingdom unknowingly aids a great threat to his world after he switches places with a beggar who looks just like him. Wanting only to escape the daily drudgery of his palace life, he has no idea what evil lies in wait around every corner. This careless brat of a boy is now the last chance for his kingdom to remain in peace rather than be enveloped in chaos. Guide him on his way to learning the path of a true prince and save his world from sinking into darkness. So, I'm going to read a little bit from the Wikipedia about this. Beggar Prince began shipping to pre-order customers on May 22nd, 2006. By September 8th, 2006, all 600 copies has been sold. So,
wow.
What I've suddenly realized is that I have this extremely rare
yes.
Sega Genesis game. On October 2006, they announced they'd been taking pre-orders for a second production run of 300 copies. And by 2007, this production run had already sold through. So internationally, we're still looking at less than 1,000 copies of this game. A third production run is announced. And in 2007, in total, the game has sold 1,500 copies. Beggar wow. Prince barely exists. And here it is in my hole.
I can't. That is unbelievable.
So here's the other thing is that it's playable on PAL, NTSC. You can play it wherever. And it was released in 2013 as a Windows and Mac OS X game. So if you wanted to play Beggar Prince, obviously you can play a ROM if you're a thief, or you can also play it from the Super Fighter Team RPG package. I have an admission to make about Beggar Prince, which is that I've never played it.
Wow.
I was digging through my hole and I saw it in the back of this cabinet of Genesis games. And I was like, oh shit. Wow. I haven't thought of nor because I was working at a magazine at the time. If I wasn't covering the game, like I didn't have time to play it. Like it wasn't. So it went into my Genesis stack. And then I mm-hmm. never thought about it again until today. So,
wow.
I'm going to fucking play Beggar Prince after I finish Ghost of Tsushima.
Is it sealed?
There was no seal.
Oh, okay.
But I mean it's in mint condition, which apparently on eBay means like it's worth like $230, but the
Christ.
Thing is nobody fucking knows the game exists. So I right. feel like it's not, you know.
Yeah.
The art is so bad. It's so bad. It's the worst art I've ever seen on the cover of a video game.
The regular one, the one that you don't have, is really funny to me. And it's like a cat man, sort of like king, sort of has his arms around two princes, you know, who looked similar as the story would, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And one prince is like, hey, I can get used to this. And the other one is like,
yeah,
this is the worst day of my life.
Right. One prince has got a flower in his pocket.
And no.
This prince want to buy you rockets.
No. Heather, I told him no.
I don't even know what that is. I have no idea what that was. But he's so delighted with himself, it's like he just laid an egg. It's like Nick just went, look what I did, and held up an egg.
Ta-da!
I said what is it?
Well, yeah, Abadaka, can you fill me in, please?
There's a Spin Doctor song called, Spin Doctor's song, Two Princes.
Yeah.
And it begins about two princes stand before me. Look, it was either that or I was going to talk about how Beggar Prince sounds like Bagger Vance. So I think I made the right call.
Let's hear more about this.
What's this game about a caddy that turns out to be God?
Oh, man. Anyway, it looks surprisingly good. I know it's a Genesis game, but it looks surprisingly good. Usually when these like weird indie releases happen years and years and years and years later, they sometimes can come off a little cheap. But I think Mega Prince looks pretty okay, except for the cover art, which they replaced. So, well, there you go.
Heather, always such a delight. I know you that we might have to go down to doing the segment like once a month or so you don't run out of items to show and tell. But you always continue to surprise and impress. I was going to say me, but I think both of us.
I've never even heard of it. It's like I'm truly blown away by this. That this is the first you've ever mentioned having this.
Well, there's a lot of stuff in my hole.
All right, let's close it up.
I gotta rummage around in there to find something to show.
Hey, that was Heather's hole. It's time for the question block.
Okay. This one is from Alex Placito from our email, and they write, Hey, Heather, Nick, and Matt. I've been replaying through Ghost of Tsushima on PS5 and noticed that in the main story missions, I'm a lot less likely to stop and explore / look for secrets than I am in side quests or when just exploring around. I feel like I get caught up in the story, and that investment makes me not want to break out of the narrative to hunt for supplies and materials. My question to you is, when it comes to hunting secrets, finding resources, etc., do you tend to always be on the lookout for them, or do you look less often during main quests? Alex.
Great question. I honestly think that I get pretty focused on the story when I get in these, in these story critical missions. I think that like if there's a plot point coming up where I just kind of want to see what's next. And also, I have a tendency to kind of role play these encounters a little bit. Like I'm kind of almost like, okay, well, even if there isn't a ticking clock, my character would think there was a ticking clock in this situation. Like he's not going to go and try to find like, you know, see if there's a safe over here that he can break open to have, you know, to get crafting materials out of. Like I'm just sort of like, yeah. So I think it absolutely does inform how I play or how whether I explore or not, unless I'm achievement hunting, which I rarely am. I don't know, Heather, what about you?
You'll never guess my answer to this, which is that I receive the message from the game return to story area so often that it annoys me. Like somebody would be like, hurry, hurry, the house is on fire. And I'm like, fuck off. I've got to go through this bag. Like it's or like I'll see like a bird and I'm like, oh, wow, can I kill that? And like run away from whatever the main mission is constantly. Like it is never a rush and all I want to do is fight. So if it is taking time to get to the fight, I will find something else to fight or dig. Like that's it. That's why I play a game. That story's not happening. This is another, I think, barricade between you guys and me in terms of like my experience of horror games. It's like nothing. I mean, with the exception of PT, where I was like, this is hell. I am in hell. There is nothing I can do except go forward. I feel like there is a natural tendency for myself in games to be like distracted by shit. So I'm less engaged unless I'm actively in combat. And that's also why horror games aren't scary, because I'm like, huh, look at the texture on this phone. This is really interesting over here, yeah, in the corner. What a strange, and there's like something yelling at me. And it's like, in the corner. And I'm like, yeah. I'm looking at like how they modeled this desk.
You saying this made me realize, only because I watched it recently, that you, when you play video games, you're like Ed Harris in Westworld. You're like, I have to solve every aspect of this and like become an old man.
He's 100% in Westworld. That's, yeah, really funny.
Show me the maze. I'm sort of in both spots. Like, I like to explore like when there's options to do that, but I'm never doing it in a completionist kind of way. Like, if I'm playing, right, Spider-Man or something, I'm like, oh, you know, I'm on my way to do this or whatever. Oh, a backpack. Let me get that backpack real quick. Okay, back to swinging around on my way to something. But it's never, I'm never like, I gotta find all the backpacks. If I see one, I see one. But if I don't, I'm not going out of my way usually.
Yeah, unless I'm replaying something.
Mm-hmm.
Go on, Heather.
Well, I also want to say, you know, I was recently diagnosed with adult ADD, mm-hmm, and have been put on medication for it. So perhaps a significant portion of my experiential hyperlinking between events in a video game is a symptom of that condition. So like, perhaps I'm like, oh yeah, let's go charge this castle. That's really interesting over there. I'm going to investigate it. Oh, on my way to that tree, I found a little puddle. Is there a secret in this puddle? Like, that might be, mm-hmm, biological almost, as opposed to like conditional. And the only time that I'm engaged enough by the game itself is the combat. So who knows? I don't know. That's a theory.
Yeah. I was looking at that guide I mentioned, that after I finished Yakuza, just to see what, you know, look at missable trophies, and there's so many fucking missable trophies, and a lot of them are, you have to do this specific thing on the story mission, you get one opportunity to do it. I think I may have got two of those by accident in my playthrough. One of them is like, there's actually, oh fuck, it's so fucking cool, Matt, you must have played this. There's this set piece where the car chase with the gunfight.
Yes.
It's like, it's really an awesome set piece. But there's like one where you have to headshot the one gunman who has an afro, and you get an achievement for that, and you get one opportunity to do it in the main story. It's just like, yeah,
baffling, but great, yeah, great sequence.
Well, yeah, it's really cool. But it's just like, yeah, I missed all that shit because I'm not exploring on these missions. I'm not trying to find the secret shit. I'm just like fucking, I'm just going full speed ahead. I want to rescue Makoto, all right?
You gotta.
Hey, you know, we've recently started soliciting you for your reviews. It's time for the listener review crew, the Ryu crew.
Ryu crew. Ryu crew.
The Ryu crew, that's right. And here's a couple of ones for the game we played last, Portal. This was from at Tactful. This is in their right. Portal, the game is fantastic, but the impact it had on culture is immeasurable. The cake is a lie. This was a triumph, etc. Played online and in-person spaces for years. To me, Portal is forever coupled with that naive, weird era of the internet, and no game since has come close. Very interesting thoughts there. Thank you for writing that. Let's see. I installed... This is from... at Rob M. Ward on Twitter, and they write, I installed Portal 2 on all the school computers and used it to teach the scientific method when I was teaching. It ruled. I would love to know more about that.
Wow.
That sounds very interesting to me.
Sounds like my favorite class.
Yeah. Portal class? Sign me up. this one's from at Ping 33 on Twitter, and they write, having someone relentlessly tell me how useless I am brought my IRL experience to my beloved hobby of video games. 10 out of 10. Really funny. And then finally, at Make It Unclear writes, Portal is God's perfect gift to his unworthy creation. Very, very good. People love Portal.
I agree.
Yeah.
Well, hey, we love hearing from you. We love your reviews of the games that we play on the show when we do play a game. So we'll play those on the next week's episode. You can send them to us on Twitter and Instagram at GetPlayedPod. Send us an email at GetPlayedPod@gmail.com, as well as your questions, any questions you got. And hey, if you leave us a voicemail, 616-2-PLAYED, that's 616-275-2933, you leave us a voicemail of a reasonable length, and you want to review a game that way, feel free to do that as well. We'll play some of those in the future. So we're open to your reviews and to your questions through all of those avenues. Our music and engineering are by Devin Brent. You can follow him on Twitter at BaffleGabs. And hey, what a fun time talking about games with the Triforce of Friendship. I'm really enjoying chatting with the two of you this week.
Oh, what a fun glitch. We had. We had a great time.
Yeah, a real delight.
Matt, tell us what we'll be playing next week.
Well, next week, Horror Month begins, and we're playing Nightmare on Elm Street. Goodbye, everyone.
Goodbye, Bucket.
Edge.
Dun, 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 dun.